ロハチュセシンス shining jewel in the necklace of the Dharma calendar, the Buddha bead in the rosary of 108 events and liturgical ceremonies, the culmination of the Dharma year. Though we also celebrate Buddha's birth and Buddha's passing into parinirvana, in the Zen tradition, Buddha's awakening day is most important. Birth and death come and go, but the Buddha's awakening is the reason we celebrate Shakyamuni Buddha. Rohatsu means December 8th, where in China and Japan, it's said that the Buddha's awakening was on the 8th day of the 12th month since ancient times. Whether we go by a lunar or a solar calendar, so maybe because it's this most important event of the Buddha's awakening, or maybe because it's called December 8th Sesshin, it tends to be practiced by Zen temples all around the world at this time. We have a lot of other sesshins, and other Zen centers have other sesshins, but seems like sometime around this first week of December, culminating in around December 8th, is Rohatsu Sesshin practice. So almost the same week that we're practicing here, there's a Rohatsu Sesshin at Jikoji, Compassion Light Temple up on the Santa Cruz Mountains, and over at Kanondo, the Avalokiteshvara Hall in Mountain View, there's a Rohatsu Sesshin at this time too. So some of our friends who sometimes come here are those sesshins. And there's another one at Tassajara Zen Mind Temple down in the mountains to end their practice period. There's another Rohatsu Sesshin at Green Dragon Temple, Green Gulch Farm, to end their practice period. And I bet there's more just in the Bay Area, but that's already five we know of in the Bay Area. Rohatsu Sesshin is going on right now, so we can feel supported by many other people sitting with us. At Bukokuji Buddha Country Temple, where I practiced in Japan, we had Sesshin the 1st through the 7th of almost every month, but the 1st through the 7th of December was Rohatsu Sesshin, and I know that they're beginning their week today on the other side of the world. At that, of the various places I practiced, that was one where they symbolically emphasized the specialness of Rohatsu Sesshin. Every Sesshin had the same daily schedule and the same 7 days of the month, except Rohatsu. Usually the Sesshins there would, the wake-up bell would ring at 3:50 in the morning, and we'd end the day with four vows at 9 o'clock. But Rohatsu Sesshin was this one exception. They'd ring the wake-up bell at 2:50, and we'd end the day at 10 o'clock. So we just kind of add a period at the beginning and the end. And we usually we would do shorter chanting services during Sesshin, and there we'd shorten them even more, kind of like emphasizing we're zazen. We're just adding in zazen and removing everything else. And as is the tradition in Japan, there's a kind of wake-up stick, you know, and during zazen there's a monitor. We'll do kinhin around the hall with the big wooden stick. And if people are getting a little snoozy, which they might if the wake-up bell's at 2:50, they get a loving but firm wake-up whack on the shoulder. And that was just the form for daily zazen throughout the year. But Rohatsu Sesshin, instead of one whack, we get two whacks. Just this one sesshin. Little symbolic differences. That's like, we're really going for it, this one, with the feeling behind it. And I think it's beautiful that we celebrate the Buddha's awakening and his diligent practice towards awakening by like imitating the Buddha. Maybe all spiritual traditions have some form of aspiring to be like their founder, and to some extent maybe imitating their founder. But I think Buddhism particularly emphasizes this, like, let's try to be like Buddha as much as we can. We'll wear a Buddha's robe, we'll eat out of Buddha's bowls, we'll Buddha practiced really diligently and fully this meditation. We're going to do it just like that, and we're going to realize Buddha's awakening. We're going to be Buddha. I think that's the spirit of this sesshin. Sesshin means to gather the mind. So the mind, in terms of thoughts and mental activity, as we know, is dispersed in our lives, our complicated, busy lives. It's kind of like it starts leaking out, and our mind is kind of like in the gutter, and awe, and in the email, and in the all the busy activities of our lives. It's dispersed. It's kind of like seeping out all over the place. And so sesshin is to gather the mind. We draw back in all these dispersed tentacles of mind into this one mind. Or if our thought is all dispersed, we gather back into the one thought, the thought of what is not thought. Or if we translate this shin of sesshin as heart, which it can be put as heart. Our heart, the emotions of our heart are also dispersed and kind of like leaking out there all over the world in all kinds of conscious and unconscious, draining kind of ways. So we gather the heart into the one heart, or the one emotion of openness, simplifying all the dispersed life into this one life, sesshin. And since the main emphasis in Sesshin is Zazen, sitting meditation, I thought it might be beneficial to take a look at our Zen founder Dogen's Fukan Zazen Gi, his first expression that he wrote about how to practice Zazen. First, and yet stayed the most, maybe some people say Dogen's most important exposition of Zazen and celebration of Zazen. And we chant this treatise here in Sesshin, and often in Zen temples. I haven't heard of this in America, but it's a common tradition in Japan to chant this whole Fukan Zazen Gi during the last period of evening Zazen. I think as a kind of daily thing, but especially in Sesshin, while facing the wall, not sort of as a service like we usually do, but more like Zazen speaking. So in the Zazen posture, the instructions are recited very slowly. So long celebrated teaching, as you all probably know, Dogen went to China when he was 23-ish, and after practicing, I think, 9 years in a monastery in Japan with his teacher Myozen, studying koans, practicing with koans and Zazen and the ceremonies of Rinzai Zen, and even receiving Myozen's Rinzai Zen lineage and Dharma. Still, after all that, he felt like, now I'm going to go really get to the bottom of this. And Zen is new in Japan, so I'm going to go to the source, Great Song Dynasty, China, across the treacherous sea, and went seeking true teachers throughout China. And Dogen was already been practicing a long time, so he had a high standard, and he met various teachers and felt like, no, he kind of tested them and felt like their expression was not quite hitting the mark. And he was, I think, getting ready to kind of give up and go home when he found his teacher Ru Jing at Tian Tong Monastery. And his search came to an end, and he met his teacher face to face and received his teacher's Dharma. Only practiced with him for like 2 years, I think, like really practiced with him quite down fully, and then returned to Japan, as Dogen himself said, empty-handed. Saying that he realized nothing in his pilgrimage to China except that his eyes were horizontal and his nose was vertical. And he went back to his old stomping ground at Keninji, and felt like he had now had a kind of a new understanding of Zazen, and he felt like the monks that are now practicing at Keninji, they have a new, good practice too, but we have a slightly different understanding here, and it's not working out so well to stay here because they don't want to hear about my weird new version of Zazen coming from China. So at some point he's like, I got to find my own way here. So he moved out into a little hermitage nearby in Kyoto and started writing. And he wrote this Fukan Zazengi to express his understanding of Zazen and just practiced alone. And eventually people discovered he was there and started practicing with him, and then the rest is history. So this Fukan Zazengi is based on earlier Zazengis. Gi means like the manners or ceremony of Zazen. So in China there were a bunch of different short treatises speaking of the manner and practice of Zazen, and Dogen liked the one most popular one, but he felt like it was a little bit off, or he wanted to add to it, so he used that as the basis for his own. And as we explore this, we can maybe look at the original too. In modern times, we might even call it plagiarism, because he took huge sections of the original, but half of it is like not written by Dogen. It's straight out of the original Chinese text. And the other half is Dogen's poetic and exuberant expressions of his own take on Zazen. So the Fu of Fukan Zazengi means universal, or like everywhere. And Kan means promoting or encouraging. So it's the universal encouragement, or the all-around recommendation for sitting. Za is sitting. Zen is Zen. Sometimes we say meditation, but that's a little bit limited, because it's actually not meditation. Dogen himself says, the Zazen I speak of is not meditation. It's Buddha's awakening. So the universal recommendation for sitting Zen manners or ceremony, or the ceremony, the universal recommendation for the ceremony of sitting Zen, the all around encouragement for the manner of sitting Zen. And there's a short note in Dogen's own handwriting from the 13th century that still exists, slightly tattered, so there's a few words missing that later people had to kind of guess at the rotted words. And it's called the Fukan Zazengi Senjutsu Yurai, the reasons for composing the Fukan Zazengi. Anyone ever heard of this? Well then, it's a short writing of Dogen. Maybe it was a little like, kind of like paper clipped onto the front of the Fukan Zazengi. This is my reasons for writing it. And it goes like this, in Dogen's own handwriting. In Japan, it has never been possible so far to learn of the special transmission outside the scriptures. This is one of the ways of talking about Zen, right? It's the special transmission outside the scriptures of the tradition. It's never been possible to learn of this, or to learn of the treasury of the true Dharma eye, not to speak of the principles of Zazen. They are thus not transmitted here at the present time. As soon as I returned home from the land of Song, China, during the Kaoroku era, students began coming to me for instruction, so I compiled this Zazengi. I was obliged, for their sakes, to do this. Long ago, Zen teacher Baijiang constructed a monastery with a hall especially built for Zazen and effectively transmitted the style of Bodhidharma. This style was distinct from the briars and brambles of attachment to words and old erroneous views which preceded him. This is Bodhidharma's separate special transmission outside the sutras, not dependent on words and letters, on briars and brambles, thorny and snarling stickiness. This style is free from that. Students must know this and not be confused about it. The Chan Yuan Qingui by Sung Yi includes a Zazengi, instructions for Zazen, and that's the one that Dogen bases his on. And although it does, for the most part, follow Baijiang's original intent, it contains some new additions by Sung Yi. But Sung Yi made a good many errors, and he has an overall tendency to ambiguity and is unaware of the understanding beyond the words themselves. Who could fail to see this? Therefore, I gather now the true secrets that I've seen and heard. I'm putting these words down in place of what is imparted in the transmission of mind. So this is the mind transmission put down in words for everyone. And this commentator says, the errors and ambiguity Dogen refers to may be some sense of Sung Yi's emphasis of Zazen as a means for strengthening concentration and approaching awakening instead of the total culmination of awakening itself. So the Fukan Zengi begins, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. And that's basically it. That's Dogen's Zazen instructions in the first sentence. And he could have stopped there, but he had a full bowl of ink in his jar, and he didn't want to waste it. And he thought some people might not get all the permutations of this simple direct teaching. So I'll go on a little bit further. But I personally deeply appreciate this first sentence. Again, the temple I practiced, Bukokuji, in Japan, there's a tradition over there of doing calligraphy on wooden signs and then kind of carving the calligraphy into the sign. Like we have one out here with a little bit of calligraphy carved in and then painted. And you often hang these calligraph poetic statements or signs over the door of a building. We have it in our zendo. We have a wooden calligraphic sign that says Warm Jewel Temple. Sometimes they're like the name of the hall, but sometimes they're just little poems. And Bukokuji, they had those wooden signs over like every door. I think one of their ancestors was a great calligrapher. And so there's a big wooden sign with big, bold, carved four characters over the Zendo door at Bukokuji. And it was these four characters, the way, basically, or originally, perfect and all-pervading. Do Hon Ensu. And learning a little bit of Japanese at this time, so all these signs, that was one of my ways of learning, is because there were these nice poetic phrases, and I'd go write them down and look them up. And when I discovered what this one said, I thought, that's so inspiring. As you walk into the Zendo, you have like Dobin's Zazen instructions, in case you forget why you're going in there. As you walk through the door, this big sign in front of you, over your head, says, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. That's all we really need to know. And then we can go and sit down. Do Hon Ensu. The way, and the Tao, is, as Lao Tzu, the Taoist founder, said, well, the way that can be spoken of is not the true way, so maybe better not say anything about it. But it's a beautiful term. And I think the English word way works very nicely because it's kind of like, it's a movement, it's a path, but it's also the way things are. The way it is. The way it is. The way it all is that can't actually be spoken of. When Buddha Dharma arrived in China, the creative translators took up the long-standing Chinese term Tao to translate like Bodhi, like enlightenment or awakening. Buddha's attaining the way, that's the ceremony we do at the end of the Sesshin, Jodo. Attaining the way is like realizing awakening. But the Chinese put it as attaining the way, realizing the way. The way is basically, I think at this point, translated as originally. It means original, but also basic. But the way is originally perfect or complete and all-pervading or penetrating. The way is originally complete and all-pervading. There's many English translations of the Fukan Zazengi, like 20 of them probably. And so here's one that I just came across by Yasuda Joshu Roshi and Anzan Hoshin Sensei up in Canada. This first sentence, I haven't heard it put quite this way, but I like it. Primordial awareness is in essence perfect and pervades everywhere. Primordial awareness. And I looked up primordial because somehow I think of it as is it primordial soup? Mm-hmm. Before the earth solid forms, it's like lava. Primeval, the dictionary said primeval, and also it said original and, at the very beginning stages of something. So I thought, that's a funny term, but in fact it's maybe quite a good translation of originally, original. And awareness seems to be like the translation of the Tao. And that may be a stretch, but I like it. Primordial, we could say like beginningless, original awareness is in essence perfect and pervades everywhere. Primordial awareness is in essence perfect, complete, and pervades everywhere. We hang it over the Zendo door. And Dogen goes on, how could it be contingent upon practice and realization? Just kind of emphasizing, I mean, obviously, right? You're welcome to, it's in the sutra book here, so you're welcome to follow in the sutra books as we study this as you wish. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? So, obviously, right? If something is originally perfect and all-pervading, it wouldn't just suddenly come to be due to our practice. That would be kind of absurd. It's originally, primordially all-pervading. It's beginninglessly, timelessly, ever present. So such a way, such an awareness, doesn't depend on anything we do. Doesn't depend on our gathering the mind in Sesshin. Doesn't depend on quiet over noisiness. Doesn't depend on sitting upright versus slouching. Doesn't depend on not thinking versus thinking. It's originally complete and all-pervading. How could it depend? How could it be contingent on our practice and realization? We could say it doesn't depend on practice, something that we do to be the way, but it doesn't depend on realization of it. So whether we realize it or not, the way is originally perfect. The Dharma vehicle is free and untrammeled. What need is there for concentrated effort? I don't know why they translated it as Dharma vehicle, because the word Dharma is not in there. It's more like the character is more like the source, or could either mean source or could mean ancestors. So some people translate it as the ancestor vehicle, like the Zen ancestors vehicle, or the source vehicle is free and untrammeled. Also, I have to look up trammel. We don't use that word much. Trammel means to hinder something, to trammel something. A trammel is also kind of a net or a cage. So untrammeled is like unhindered or unrestrained. So the vehicle of the source is free and unhindered. What need is there for concentrated effort? Indeed, the whole body is far beyond the world's dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It's never apart from one, right where one is. What is the use of going off here and there to practice? Yeah, we might wonder why we make such effort to embark on 7 days of sitting. So uncomfortable. So tedious. So boring. So so plain. so unexciting, so sometimes torturous. What need is there for concentrated effort? The whole body, you might say, is another name for the original way. And this is where Dogen's adding in all these poetic pointers. I think these phrases are great because each one is like an expression of the way. The whole body, the entire body, the cosmic body, the Dharma body, the all-inclusive body, the true human body is the whole universe in 10 directions. And it's far beyond the world's dust or any kind of dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it or wipe it clean? So this is a reference to this Six Ancestor Platform Sutra, where we have these poems about dust landing on the mirror, and one Zen student expressing his understanding as dust is constantly landing on our mirror, we have to constantly wipe it clean. And Hui Nong, the sixth ancestor, saying, that seems like not quite right according to my understanding. He said, actually, there's actually no real mirror and real dust to land on it from the beginning. There's not a single thing. So there's nothing to wipe away or clean, right? So I think this Dogen's expressing this here. The whole body, right, is free. The whole body is the vast mirror that's not a real mirror. And it's therefore beyond all dust. Who can believe in a means to brush it clean? Another nice way to think of this metaphor of the dust on the mirror is it's like we think the metaphor here, of course, is like the primordial awareness mirror, and then the dust is like all these kind of dualistic thoughts and emotions and experiences that keep landing and on a mirror and obscuring it. So if we can just like wipe away these thoughts, kind of like let them settle out, then the mirror can just reflect purely. And the other version of the poem is that these dualistic thoughts and emotions don't really obscure the mirror, right? They're not really outside the mirror. They're not really dust that lands on the mirror and blocks the mirror. They are actually like reflections on the mirror. You might say, we're looking at an actual mirror and it seems like there's dust on there, and maybe in real life there is dust and we wipe it off. But this is the kind of mirror, when you look at the dust on the mirror, it's actually the reflection of dust on the mirror. In this kind of mirror, there's nothing outside the mirror to block it that needs to be removed. Or, a busy mind doesn't need to be stopped in order for the mirror to reflect. The busy mind is one of the reflections on the mirror. Therefore, it's made of the mirror. The reflections are actually nothing more than the mirror, are they not? They appear to be something different, but they're made of mirror. The substance of the reflections is the substance of the mirror. There's no other substance there. So, therefore, who could believe in some method or means to wipe the mirror clean? It. The whole body, the way, is never apart from one, right where one is, always right here. What's the use of going off here and there to practice? Looking somewhere else, right? Looking somewhere else for it. So that's, that whole paragraph is a beautiful expression of non-duality. When nothing needs to be done, it's complete and perfect. Does anyone have a clock? Or a
what? It's 11 straight up.
It's 11 straight up. Well, after celebrating this all-pervading way, and the whole paragraph, and I think it's a great meditation. This whole paragraph is the Zazen instructions, right? This is the manner of Zazen that is being universally recommended by Dogen. But we might fall into a kind of one-sidedness. We might say, well then, whatever, everything's it. How could it not be? Yes. And then Dogen follows this up with, and yet, but, wait a minute, and yet, if there's the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Oh well. And this is actually a quote from one of our other chants, the Song of the Trusting Mind. I think our translation says it like, a hair's breadth difference, deviation, is fails to accord with a proper attunement. A hair's breadth deviation fails to accord with a proper attunement. Yeah, it's the same, in the Chinese, it's exactly the same. It's a direct quote. So it's literally, so I think that's, our version is kind of interpretive. It's literally like the distance between heaven and earth. A hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. It's another translation. Or like sky and earth. If there's a hair's breadth, deviation, discrepancy, or what did we say?
A hair's breadth deviation fails to accord.
Do we say hair's breadth? Or slightest? A slightest hair's
breadth. That's in here.
The slightest discrepancy. The slightest discrepancy.
A hair's breadth deviation will fail to accord.
Yeah, a hair's breadth. I think it's like literally like the breadth of a hair. Oh no, it's up, it's the fifth line. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Different parts.
Yeah.
Entirely.
But same meaning. Yeah. Yeah. Make the smallest distinction, however, hair's breadth distinction, and heaven and earth, literally, are set infinitely apart. Oh, here's my clock. And what is this hair's breadth difference? What is this discrepancy? In terms of what Dogen's saying, it seems like a little bit of thought that the dust is not made of the mirror, you might say. It's like a little bit of duality. That the dust and the mirror are one being, right? The reflection of the dust and the mirror, a reflection of a painful face and the mirror are not two things, right? But if we separate them by the hair's breadth, if we think the face is something other than the mirror, is somehow outside of primordial awareness, that hair's breadth difference is like heaven and earth are split in two. Right? It's like that's the birth of duality. And from that hair's breadth difference between mind and object, the entire ocean of suffering and misery pours down on us and the world, and we're sunk in, you know, even if we're, say, having a good time, we're still sunk because the seeds for discontent and impermanence and separateness of all kinds are born. So this is a beautiful expression of the way is originally complete and all-pervading. And yet, if we veer off that reality, if in the slightest way, heaven and earth, which are originally one, it's kind of implied maybe here, heaven and earth are one reality too, but this seems to split heaven and earth, seems to split like the perfect bliss of heaven and the toils of worldly life on earth. They're not two things, the bliss of heaven and worldly toils of life on earth. But a hair's breadth difference makes them appear so. Yes?
I mean, it's sort of, the hair's breadth is the same thing as not realizing unity, right?
Yeah, that's it.
So it's not causal. It sounds like hair's breadth difference, and you got this thing happens, but it's already happened.
What's happened?
Well, I'm just saying, you take that perspective, then
the perspective of reality.
I'm just saying this. You can, I guess that's the sort of how it is with dual versus non-dual. Is that there's not a dividing line. So if you say when the dividing line happens, then there's heaven and earth are separated. I mean, it's what you can't ever say. It's not causal, is what I'm trying to say. I mean, it sounds a little tiny bit like if there's a little bit of misunderstanding, then the whole thing, then that there's a ramification of that.
Yeah.
But really, the little tiny thing, it's already done.
Yeah. Well, we could say it like that little thing creates this world of suffering, but from the perspective of the all-pervading way, it doesn't create that, right? From non-duality, the suffering doesn't, there is no suffering, right? But if we start believing in the illusion of duality, then that's what you could say the causal thing of suffering arising. It's not really that it arises, it's just that it seems to. And we believe it does, and therefore that's what we call suffering, right? So nothing really happens. I think you're saying it sounds like there's some causal process, but nothing is really caused.
It's interesting. I mean, it's a problem of language too. I mean, I wasn't really talking about suffering, but I mean, I guess you could. But
well, heaven and earth splitting apart.
Yeah, but I'm just.
That's suffering.
You know, this is like we're talking about practice, and we're sitting here we're practicing, and there's this idea of doing and improving or trying to get that miracle and whatever. But that has a kind of sense that if I concentrate hard enough, there won't be a discrepancy.
No, I think that's not what he's saying.
No, he's not. But yeah. it sounds a little bit like that. I slip, boom, there's heaven and earth. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the thing is slip from what, right?
Yeah.
So.
I guess that's part of the koan is to realize that that's not what he's saying. But.
It's more about non-doing, right? First, this is presentation of their way is originally perfect and complete. So there doesn't, and he said, this is not contingent on any practice or realization. So we start opening to this reality, and we could say we're already in this reality. The whole body is already beyond dust, and then if we start thinking about this or activate what we call dualistic mind, then nothing really changes. The mirror never changes, but it seems to create this whole world of split of heaven and earth. So rather than it's something like we have to do something to make it happen, it's more like we just have to not do something, kind of activate the mind, or maybe even that's a little too much, because it's not about thinking or not thinking either. It's more like, I would say, believing. If we believe our thoughts are separate from this primordial awareness, then that's what really rips the heaven and earth apart. The thoughts themselves are actually just reflections on the mirror. But if we believe they're separate, which is actually a kind of view that we hold mostly all day long, and when we do that, we're never quite content all day long. So Sashin's this time of it's Dogen's pointing us back to this completeness that doesn't need to be attained or practiced or realized even. This Yasuda Joshu translation says, the thing is, if there's the slightest gap, sky and earth are ripped apart. If you give rise to even a flicker of like and dislike, you lose your mind in delusion. So like and dislike is, I think, another key piece that he mentions here too, right? Is that's kind of like, you could say that's a little bit after just believing that our thoughts are separate from primordial awareness. The next moment after believing that they're separate, we're into like and dislike. And we're into like, this way is better than that way. But from the point of view of the mirror, right, the mirror doesn't discriminate between better and worse. Like, the mirror doesn't like certain images and not like others. And this is the way that's already all-pervading, we could say, but I don't feel that way. That's because we're looking for it in some feeling or some thought or something other than what's already the case.
But there's the thing we chant, the song of Jewel Mir Samadhi. Doesn't it say if you miss, there's this idea of missing it.
I think miss is like, means like activating, dualistic thought. The part that Dogen replaced from the original Zazengi in this whole section, the original Chinese text just said, the bodhisattva who studies prajna, or wisdom, should first arouse the thought of great compassion, make extensive vows, and then carefully cultivate samadhi. Vowing to save all sentient beings, one should not seek liberation for oneself alone. So that's also a nice instruction about, and particularly emphasizing compassion, and the reason we're practicing Zazen is to free all beings from suffering, not just our own liberation. But it's also a very plain, straightforward text. Dogen is kind of celebrating non-duality, might even say, he doesn't mention that this point of vowing to save all sentient beings, because from the perspective of the originally perfect, all-pervading way, all beings are primordially saved, you know, free from the start, free from suffering, beginninglessly free from suffering. Let's say, but it doesn't look like that to me. That's true. It doesn't look like that to me either. But that's because we have a lot of ideas about what suffering is. And we have 7 days to explore what suffering is. And we can believe that it really is suffering and that we need to free ourselves from it, or we can take another approach. It's not really an approach. It's just opening to the originally perfect, all-pervading way that manifests as reflections of knee pain and butt pain and neck pain and back pain and mind pain and body pain and heart pain and spleen pain and stomach pain and shoulder pain and little toe pain. All reflected, made of the same substance as primordial mirror awareness. Therefore, any merit gathered on the surface of the mirror is merely a reflection of the mirror, but that doesn't stop us from offering it to all the reflected beings. May they enjoy the mirror on which they live. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.